Hello, and welcome to the podcast where our goal is to remind you that amidst the chaos and craziness of the world, there is still plenty of good that's worth shouting about. In each episode, we're going to be joined by nonprofit professionals, leaders, experts, and advocates to hear their stories, facilitate connection within the nonprofit sector, and hopefully put a smile on your face, because that's always nice. This is Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes. Let's share some good. Hey there, it's Matt Barnes, and this is Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes. That's me. I already said that. It's redundant when I do that. But anyway, I'm your host, and my co-host Tiffany Pope is out today, so it's just me. It's just me, and I'm here. I want to invite you all to check out npconnect.roguecreatives.com to see what else we have going on with Nonprofit Connect, because we do have live events here in Orange County for nonprofits to actually connect in person. The podcast is awesome, and we get to hear from people all over the world, which is really, really cool. But there's just something about being in person and getting to actually pick each other's brains and learn from each other and be inspired by the work that's being done around us. I think I was telling somebody last week, the unexpected, wonderful side effect or benefit, bonus, whatever, of doing this podcast for me has been the fact that the world, we all know the world kind of sucks. We're inundated with it all the time. The constant barrage of push notifications from the various news sources telling us how the world's falling apart. This podcast has been just amazing to give me hope and joy. And as I hear from people all over the world doing just the most amazing things, you guys are awesome. And just gives me hope for my kids and the world that they're going to live in, that there are people out there who are not contributing to the chaos, but to making the world a better place. And we don't hear about that enough. And so if nothing else, this podcast can highlight those people. But I think there's also amazing nuggets of wisdom to be gleaned from these amazing people. So I hope you enjoy this interview today. It's with Daniel Hill. Daniel is the Director of Business and Innovation at the Environmental Defense Fund in Washington, D.C., which is the nonprofit dedicated to stabilizing the climate while building strong and healthy communities. And that's kind of a big deal. And we get into that. We get into talking about how he ended up there. He is a great guy. I really had fun interviewing him and getting to know more about climate crisis and the challenges that he's had to face. And while that's a big, massive, global challenge, it's amazing how similar the challenges are to some of the really small nonprofits that I work with and the larger ones that I work with as well. We're all facing very similar challenges just on different scales. So there is some great wisdom here and insights and nuggets to take away. So we will be right back after this brief message. Bye-bye. Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes is brought to you by Rogue Creatives. Did you know that your brand has a personality all of its own? Well, it does, or it should, but maybe it doesn't. How do you know if it does? Here's what you do. Ask yourself, does the way you describe your organization match the way you describe your branding? Because it really needs to. Why? Because people don't connect with organizations. They just don't. They don't feel connected to them. They feel connected to characters. They feel connected to personality. So it's super important that your brand has a personality that connects with the right people to bring them into your story. And that's what Rogue Creatives is all about. We've developed our very own process called the Strategic Storytelling Framework to define your brand personality and create a brand foundation that will make sure your organization has that main character energy that connects with others and pulls them right into your story. And by the way, it works. And we got the receipts. Our nonprofit clients have seen incredible increases in giving that have allowed them to help even more people and make the world a better place. Get started today by visiting roguecreatives.com/NPC. That's NPC for Nonprofit Connect. You can schedule a free brand consultation and take our free online brand character quiz. And we all know that everybody loves a good online quiz, especially when it's free. So get over there and do that, because why not? Why wouldn't you? You love it. It's going to be fun. That's roguecreatives.com/NPC to begin defining your brand character today. There's no commitment or risk for you at all. And honestly, we just can't wait to meet you. We kind of think we could be good friends. I think we could hang out. You could buy us lunch. We can help you with your branding and talk about the shows we're binging or whatever. It'd be nice. Rogue Creatives. Seriously, creative storytelling. All right, on with the show. All right, I'm here with Daniel Hill. You prefer Daniel or Dan?
I prefer Daniel.
Well, good, because I like Daniel. I like saying Daniel better. And that's what's most important, really. What a welcome, right? Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I've never started off that way, but sure, why not?
Yeah, thank you, Matthew.
Yeah. You know, there was a time where I was like, I should be Matthew. And then I'm like, that it just doesn't feel right because I'd been Matt my whole life and whatever.
I get it. I grew up Danny.
Oh, really?
And then I did make the switch to Daniel.
Nice.
Which is super confusing for a small portion of people in my life. But everyone else, they got it.
I won't go too off on a tangent here, but I had a friend who named Emily, and she went to college. And immediately at the first event she went to, she met like five Emilies. And so her middle name's Victoria. So without consulting anyone or even thinking about it, she just started introducing herself as Tori. Didn't tell anybody back home. This was back in the days of landlines. And so people would call her house on the weekends or, you know, whatever, and ask for Tori. And her parents are like, you got the wrong number. It was a very confusing time for all of us.
She lost a lot of friends that summer.
Yeah, she did a birthday party and it was half people from home and half people from school. And half are going like, where's Emily? Wait, who's Emily? Where's Tori? You know? Anyway, all right. So before we jump in, we always start off with a segment we call Three Random Questions. We've got a list of, I don't know, I think we're up to like 80, 90 questions now. And we got a randomizer that chooses three. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What is your favorite animated movie?
I'm going to go real classic and say the original Lion King.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
Thank you.
I do judge your answers. Just in case you're wondering, I will definitely tell you. No.
There's a score. All right.
Right, good. Right. You're doing well so far. Let's keep it going. All right. We're moving on to the next round for 300 point. No. One music artist or band you can choose to listen to for the rest of your life. Who is it?
So, Matt, I've listened to quite a few of the episodes and I'm like, you know, maybe I'll get the Superpowers one. Maybe I'll get What I Had for Breakfast. I get one artist listen for the rest of my life. I think the easy answer would be the Beatles.
Excellent.
Because
you can't go wrong with that.
You can't go wrong with it. Right. I'll go with the Beatles.
Are you more of a like early or like a Sgt. Pepper's kind of Beatles?
More of a Sgt. Pepper.
Nice.
Less of a Hold Your Hand.
Yeah. I mean, I love the early stuff too, but man, it's for them to go on the journey they went on in like 8 years is insane. I'm just so fascinated by that.
And just how prolific they were. Like, that is what, when they're like, oh yeah, 20 songs a week. What?
Yeah. And they're all hits. They're all just like some of the best songs ever written. Amazing. Very, very good. In fact, we've got Beatles playing here in the building today. Final question. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I would say it's If I Ever Fall in Love by Shy.
Oh.
Which is an a cappella song.
Yeah. Wow.
Which.
That's a great song.
It's a pretty big power move when you get on karaoke and say, I don't need the musical accompaniment. Just give me the microphone.
Just karaoke. So a cappella karaoke. You're just singing.
It pretty much, yeah,
that is a baller move. I like it.
Is that technically karaoke?
I don't know. I don't really care. I love it. I think it's great. Rules, who needs them, right? You make your rules. All right. Bonus question. Which superpower would you have?
Oh, man.
Since you prepared for that one.
Yes. Well, the only reason why I'm prepared for it is someone recently asked it to me.
Oh, okay.
And my answer was, I would want the power to always feel like I got a full night's sleep. Just like always feel super rested.
That might be the best answer I've ever heard.
I have a new answer, though.
Oh, okay.
And that is, I would like the superpower to always know what size Tupperware to grab to put leftovers in. Because I always get it wrong.
And if you could find the right lid to go with it.
Oh, that's greedy, but yeah.
Because it's like the Tupperware and lids is like socks in the dryer, right?
Yeah.
It's always the mismatch. There will always be the monster in there stealing our things. And anyway, I think it's my kids, but I'm not really sure. Could be the dog. Anyway, all right. Well, Daniel, I said this to you before we started recording, but I was a little surprised when you popped up. You're a younger man than I anticipated with your resume. Tell us your origin story and how you got to where you are now and what you're working on.
I appreciate it. I'm going to take that as I look good for my age. We'll go with that instead. But so I have spent my entire career working to mitigate climate change. I went to school with that thought of like, I'm going to work on environmental issues. And I really kind of started from this place of like, I'm pretty good at physics. I'll be an engineer. Started more in like the technical side. I worked at like a startup. I worked at consulting, all kind of in this energy efficiency, sustainability space. And then I made a real hard pivot into the nonprofit sector, but still in climate, and realized two things. One, I much prefer working on the nonprofit side because it's way more aligned with the values and the actual purpose of why I want to do this work. And two, I'm just so far from a technical person. So I realized that's not my place. So I've really spent more of my career building programs that help other people take climate action. To date, I think cumulatively, it's been like 12,000 people that my work has actually touched and impacted. And I founded my own nonprofit. I now work at one of the big greens. And then I've been working on some kind of like just side community projects and happy to get into all those. But that's going to be my like super short where I am right now.
And is the nonprofit you started, is that still going?
It's not. So it ran for 5 years. So it's called Green Impact Campaign. We were solely focused on getting students a real life experience with energy efficiency. So we would train them on how to actually help small businesses save energy. And we did that for 5 years. And we found out that like 90% of the students that went through the program talked about that in interviews. It was like this very small project they did, but was real instead of like, I took this course or I did this class project. So it ran for 5 years. And then we all kind of moved on to other things.
Yeah. What is it about climate change that really is connect with?
I hear my colleagues and like friends that work in this space answer this question. And it's always just such a beautiful story they tell. Like, I was hiking and I saw this amazing bird and I realized I have to save this. And these like beautiful stories of like being in nature and like connecting with it. I'm more of like an indoor person. I'll go for the occasional hike. The reality of why I worked on this is when it came time in my life to like pick a career, I just thought like, if I'm going to spend this much time working, I just want it to matter and like be something worthwhile. And at the time I looked around and said, what's the biggest threat to humanity? It's climate change. Cool. That's the one. That's what it feels like is the only thing worth working on right now. And boy, was that a good call back then, because it's only getting more so, not less so since then.
For somebody who's not in that industry, that's frustrating. For you, that's got to be just maddening to be like, we see this snowball coming, and instead of going, hey, we can stop this thing, we're just letting it turn into a giant avalanche. I don't even know if that metaphor holds up, but you know what I'm saying.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's like an innate level of optimism that you have to have while working on this, because every day you wake up, it seems like the fire's gotten larger, not smaller. Everything is just burning.
And sometimes literally.
It's literally, more so than not literally now. Things are either burning or flooding. You're totally right, though. Like, it's very frustrating as just human, but also even more so as someone working in the space. But for me, that's like the outlet. You know what I mean? Like, climate anxiety has become a real thing for people. And for me, I found the best thing to help alleviate that is to spend my days working on it.
Yeah, it's always interesting how, because things get so politicized, and I mean, we talk about COVID, we could talk about any topic that should be about facts and science, and it gets politicized, and then it becomes this thing that is so divisive. You know, anything else that makes sense, like in our lives, that's personal, you go, oh, that's a problem, let's fix it. There's so many things that, because of politics and because of the world the way it is, become something where you go, oh, that's something we should fix. And people go, no, that's not real. You're imagining that. You know,
like, and there's spheres of that. There's like the big ones where it's like people yelling, it's not man-made, or like it doesn't exist. And that's just like, okay, that's just a whole thing itself. But then even within the actual industry of people working on climate, there's these semantics sometimes where it's like, well, no, this should be this way, this should be that way. And you kind of step back sometimes, you're like, what are we doing? Like, we don't have time for this. We don't have time to like argue about something that we're all working on the same thing. But yeah, there's so many levels of politics that do make it frustrating. I feel like I've spent this whole interview just talking about how I'm frustrated this work.
Well, I keep asking you questions about it. But I mean, I do think, you know, you said there's an inherent optimism needed to be able to do this. And this is a topic that comes up, I think, over and over again on this podcast, in conversations that I have in the nonprofit space in general, because people are tackling large issues. This may be the largest as far as existential, but I think these are people that I've talked to that are taking on these large issues that a lot of times have become politicized. And even if they haven't, it's something that it's oftentimes fighting an uphill battle. And if you don't have some sort of hope or optimism in it, then you're not going to survive. How do you keep that in one that is so heavily politicized and is so existential for us? How do you find that?
For me, it is the human level. So for me, and I think that's why I naturally gravitated working towards more of like working with people and not technology, is because when I'm having a conversation with someone, and one of the things I do is I run an internal innovation lab at the Environmental Defense Fund. And when I see someone come with a new idea and then like watch them bring it to life and then see the impact that that idea has had on thousands of other people, there is like a certain level of satisfaction and a certain level of like, whoa, if that changed this person and that actually impacted these people, let's keep that going. Let's keep doing more of that. Because in terms of climate change, it's not a technology problem. It's not a finance problem. It's 100% a human capital problem. We need more people working on this, not with chief sustainability officer titles, but just more people finding ways to work on this in their jobs. And we need more people to care about this, which is even harder of a challenge, but we have everything we need. It's just, we need people in the right places to actually put the things into motion. And that's just super hard because people are harsh.
Part of it is that, and part of it is also people being willing to give up the things that need to be given up. And I mean, well, I'll take a very simplistic kind of, but you know, okay, we have electric cars. Obviously, there's things still in the production, all that to be worked out, but inherently a cleaner technology. But you've got people who are just like, well, you can take my gas-powered engine over my dead body. And I'm like, I drive a Tesla, and I've driven nice, fast, fun cars in my life. This is honestly the best car I've ever had, whatever. But it is fast, it is fun, and it also is energy efficient, all these things. So at some point you go, that doesn't really even hold up. What is it here that we are fighting against? The 0 to 60 on this $60,000 car is faster than most $150,000 cars. You know, the maintenance is less than this, the that, whatever. What are we fighting for here on the other side? And it comes down to people just don't want like change. People just don't want to give up their things and they don't like change. And there's a lot of money in those industries in those areas. So there's a lot to combat there. And it's crazy to me, and again, as somebody from the outside who's just reading the news, that as there's constantly new technologies and electric cars have come as far as they have and other technologies and all this, we're still fighting this battle because it's almost like every time there's progress here, they're like, ah, but we're going to do this here.
You know? Yeah, there's a lot of that. You can see a lot of that too with like the anti-ESG rhetoric going around now where it's like, whoa, we can't let like this woke ESG stuff take over like how we report on finances. That's where it's really frustrating. But you're right. I mean, there's these different levels of at the company and industry level, it's seen as a threat to money. Like if we change, then we're losing our business model when a lot of those industries actually have a huge financial opportunity to lean into this more. And then on the individual level, it is a level of change. And I think a lot of it is like an image thing too, right? Like people like things because they're part of a community that way. So it is a challenge to get that moving. And that's why I say I think it's more of a people problem than a technology or a finance problem. But I think Tesla's really interesting. There's a really interesting documentary made called Who Killed the Electric Car? And it's about how electric cars were actually created like a long time ago. I think maybe back in like the 80s or 90s maybe. And some people were driving them and they loved them. And then like mysteriously, they just got killed. Like were taken off the road. People that got them were kind of like taken back. And they're like, why are you taking this back? And the documentary kind of goes through like who was behind that in a way, like who didn't want these cars on the road and who didn't want it to be prolific. But I think Tesla's a great example and all the other EV makers where like someone figured out okay, maybe we try to do this in a way that people don't see it as a drastic change. It's like a cool sports car that happens to be electric.
Exactly. And without getting too crazy, I'm not a huge Elon Musk fan anymore, especially. But there was something that Tesla did that I think they approached it in a different way, I feel like. And because they weren't also tied to the legacy automakers, they were had a little bit more freedom. But it was like, no, we're going to try to give you something that not only competes with what you think is great and luxury, sports car or whatever, but we're going to make it better and try and make this mainstream. And now all the other legacy automakers are kind of racing to catch up and figure out, how do we do this? So credit where it's due. They did kickstart that whole thing, I think, because it was almost non-existent at that point. I mean, hybrids were happening, but hybrids only go so far.
Hybrids, like, why did the first Prius look like Dustbusters? Right. That's a perfect example of, like, it's almost like it was intentionally made to look like a symbol of, oh, this thing is different, but also like...
But also ugly. Not even good different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, I want to hear the examples and things that you have from your industry, but I do think a lot of this stuff is so applicable to almost any nonprofit. Of we're all sort of facing these uphill battles in these areas, and there is so much in having to be able to find that optimism and be able to go to work every day and still be like, yeah, I want to do this, because in some ways, you're just going to get beat up over and over again. Are there practical things that you've found for yourself that keep you going, or that, I don't know, because burnout in these is so real?
I realized a while back that when I'm not at work, I limit the amount of content I consume related to climate change. So I'm not like doom scrolling through articles. I'm not constantly watching documentaries about climate change. Like, I realized very early on that that is where I would get in trouble, is like 24 hours a day, I'm just reading about how terrible things are. That's a big one for me. So when I'm not working, I'm usually trying to read or watch or listen to anything else kind of thing. And not only does that give me a break, but I also have found there's usually a lot of really interesting things to learn from other industries or from other topics that can then be like pulled into climate work that maybe people aren't thinking about. Behavior change, right? Like, that's a psychology study, but it's really interesting when it's applied to climate. That's a big one. The other one I think is just finding community. I think that one's throughout my career, that I learned that one when I was an entrepreneur and I was going through a lot of stuff by myself and I didn't have a team. And like, you feel so isolated that I'm sure you've experienced some of that in the early days. Like, it's hard to go to like a happy hour with your friends that have like a corporate job and be like, man, payroll, am I right, guys? And like, what? No, I don't know what that's. So there's some real things that you want to talk about, but you don't know. So I was part of a couple really great incubators and accelerators and met some amazing people. And like, it felt like I found my people. And that really kept me going. I think the same is true about climate work too, is like finding people that are working on it and they get it is always really kind of re-energizing when you're a bit down. So I would say those two are the ones that I've really like held on to the most, besides like exercise and eating healthy and all these things that like just healthy.
What's that like, exercise and eating healthy? Tell me more about that. Since I've had kids, those things have not been happening as much, and I need to work on that.
I get that.
It's interesting, something you just said made me think, and this may not be an original thought in any way, but are there people approaching climate change, because you started out saying climate change is a people problem, right?
Yeah.
Is there an organization, or are there people, are there studies, are there things being done? Yes, obviously the new technologies and all of that, but just how do we address the psychology of this? And if we focus on that, could we make some headway here? Like, the psychology of people being stuck in their ways or not being open to change or whatever it might be. I mean, I feel like that could be, again, applied to homelessness or so many issues in the world. But is that an area that's being explored?
I think it is, which is great. I don't know if it's as explicit as the way that you're laying out, but for example, this must have been 10 years ago, I found out about Doug McKenzie Moore, really pioneered this thing called community-based social marketing. And the whole concept was like, how do we get behavior change for sustainable action? And it's just looking at like human psychology, community norms, like really getting back to that kind of fundamental. And I go back to his kind of teachings very often, I would say. There's also a big movement going on right now around like, how do we get people to use their current jobs towards climate? So again, like very people centered, less on like the psychology side, but more on tapping into that climate anxiety of people waking up, going to their job and be like, I feel like I should be doing something more. There's some really good work going on. Project Drawdown's doing great work. There's these communities like Work on Climate that's popping up where like it's just bringing people together to really think about that. And that's actually what we need. That what we need is more of people finding ways to use their existing jobs and figuring out how to like use their influence as an employee to put some pressure on their company to actually take actions. That's where you get some scalable impact. But I'm sure there's like more research being done on the psychology, but in terms of organizations, I think some are probably having some trouble getting funding because it is so hard to measure that in some cases, but I think it's growing, which is encouraging.
And that sort of leads me to my next thing I wanted to talk to you about, because you brought this up when you were going back and forth with my team too, talking about that philanthropic giving typically doesn't allow for a lot of risk-taking. It doesn't allow for a lot of exploration. And this is a topic that comes up a lot as well, just in that the culture around nonprofits has unfortunately become one where directed giving is the standard. Everybody feels like they are entitled to their say. If I've donated money, I get to say how you're going to spend it. So nonprofits are not run the way that for-profits are. They're not run effectively and efficiently, and they're not allowed to spend money on the things that are actually going to help them be successful or to take risks and to do some research or to try things that may not work, but to go out and become the experts like a company would. What's your experience there, Ben, and what thoughts have you had on that?
I think you kind of hit it right on the head with that. I think traditionally, a lot of philanthropic giving, like you said, is very direct in terms of we are going to give you this money. You're going to lay out the exact plan on what you're going to do with that money. Like give us an action plan, give us month by month breakdown, and then the exact outcomes and the impact that it's going to have. What that doesn't do is allow organizations to take risks, fail along the way, and then be like, oh, wow, this thing that we wrote out might not be true because we just learned this thing. And what would be more impactful is actually to change this. A lot of folks can go back to a donor or a foundation and say like, hey, we learned this, we want to change it. But then to your point, like it's up to them if they say yes or no to that. And that's a huge risk if you're really like depending on that money that you've brought in. It's just really limiting in terms of the potential impact. So what ends up happening is people still just kind of go through it, even though they know there's something more they could have done. And it's a problem. The other challenge I've seen is a lot of philanthropic giving does not like to support overhead. It's always like, what are the project costs? But we don't want to hear about salaries.
Right. We don't want to hear about salaries or marketing.
Yeah. Marketing is always a big one too. You're right. So I'll just speak from my own experience, but as someone that ran a nonprofit, like that was the biggest need to get the work done. It wasn't like, I don't even know, because we were like a virtual training, like everything was online. Like, what are we going to spend our costs on? It's just people. And that's really challenging for folks. I think if I had it my way, I think philanthropic giving would be a little bit more of the VC model where it's like, you know what, we're going to make 10 bets and we're going to put it out there and one or two of those might hit and they might be big. Like they might do something big with this money that we gave them that we came to terms with might not go anywhere. That's where I think nonprofits could really start to do some things that would multiply the impact that they could have or learn a ton more along the way that they can then share with others and like really bring others into it. So that's, I mentioned earlier, but this innovation lab that I run, that's our entire model. We've found some amazing donors that support that kind of model. And our whole thing is if 100% of the projects that we're funding are successful, then we're failing because clearly we're not taking enough risks. So it's been this space where it's just like, bring in the idea, let's see what we learn from it. That's always our biggest metric is like, what did you learn from running this pilot? Not what was the impact of the pilot? Because then that gives us more tools and that gives us more things we can do in the future.
Right. That's how we get to impact. And that's why I think so many nonprofits are running in circles doing the same thing year after year after year after year. When people donate, whether it's individuals or grants or corporations or whatever, they're looking going, I want to support that program. I want this money to go to this thing. And so they're not even able to go, but we wanted to try something new, you know, like, and these are to let them be the experts who are out there trying to solve this problem. This is why part of we do a lot of marketing storytelling for a lot of these nonprofits. And one of the things that I'm trying to get shifted is this idea of people are not like a nonprofit that works with kids. A lot of times invest in this child's life. And I'm like, no, no, no. Yeah, that sounds great. Invest in this nonprofit. You're investing in, and so that they can try and make this child's life. Like, that's where you're investing your funds. And marketing, especially for a nonprofit, is not overhead. This is mission critical. Like, your whole thing is to bring people awareness and get more support. Well, you got to get the story out there. You got to bring people into it. How are you going to criticize people for spending money and resources on that? If they're doing it poorly, okay, that's one thing, but it's created this. And I think it started maybe from a good place of people were abusing the system. So, hey, we got to have some, but now it's gotten to a place where a lot of nonprofits are feeling like they can't do it. They're just not as effective as they could be.
Yeah. It's a lack of opportunity to learn. You were just talking about like this concept of could someone go out there and study and like put together programs for like the psychology behind climate change and behavior change. That would be a hard thing to get funded. Right? Because you don't know. You don't know what that would look like. You don't know what the next year of that would look like. You're saying, this is thing I want to explore. It might lead nowhere, but like it might lead somewhere. That's the exact area of why I said like probably hard to get funding for that because it's tough.
We're doing a screening here for one of our live Nonprofit Connect events next month of the Uncharitable movie, the documentary that came out. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Dan Pilotta, he had done a TED Talk years ago that really challenged these ideas for nonprofits. Of the basic idea that I walked away from his TED Talk was, if you want to be an effective nonprofit, you need to run your nonprofit like it's a business, like it's a for-profit. You know, I had a guest on who said, nonprofit is, it's a tax status. It's not a job description. This shouldn't dictate how you run your business. It dictates what forms you need to fill out and all that and the taxes. And then he wrote a book based on that. And now they've turned it into a documentary. And one of the things we're working in the nonprofits we work with and looking at is how do we help change that public perception and get people who are on boards and people who are volunteers and all that to kind of understand this so that we can help spread a different idea of how to support nonprofits. But it's huge. It's kind of like climate change. It's a huge shift. It's like, how do we change everybody's way they think about this thing? But it has to be done in some way because I feel like nonprofits are so stuck. And we're not able to make the impact that could be made, that should be made. Climate change should be ahead of where it is now.
Definitely not getting this much worse. Like, you would think you'd get at least staying the same. But
yeah, we should have been able to at least, like, get it to a neutral place. But it's like every year I see the reports by this date, if this doesn't happen, and then the date gets moved back. And it's just like, at some point, that date's going to come. And we're screwed. Well, on that note,
we're back here again.
Yeah. How do we give hope to people? How do we close this on a positive note?
Just one comment to what you were saying is in terms of like getting others to think that way. One thing I found to be a bit of a bridge is when I'm talking to people that are from the private sector or the venture capital sector or corporate, whatever, it's a little bit quicker. And they've come over to philanthropy, like it's a little quicker to kind of draw that comparison of like, well, think of like R&D in a company. It's like, oh yeah, I got you. Like that part of it, I think those are going to be kind of the allies to help champion some of that message. But to your point, it's still very difficult.
Yeah. Well, man, this has been really informative. I feel like you and I could probably keep talking for a few hours if we didn't have time limits on us. We always close with a few questions, and you kind of commented on one of these earlier, is the need for community and feeling connected. Now, today, where you're at, what makes you feel most connected to your community?
So about a year and a half ago, I started this initiative called Open Door Climate. Through the years, I get a lot of requests in terms of like, hey, I'm kind of interested in working in the space. Could you do a coffee chat? And I took and take as many of those as I could. But one day I was like, what if I'm more proactive about this? I put up just like a status on LinkedIn saying like, hey, I have an open door policy. Anyone that's talk about it, just reach out. I ended up talking to 50 people in 2 weeks because like I just was getting so many requests and I realized like there's a real need for this. So I tapped some of my network and some of my friends and said like, if you're willing to do this, put up the status. And from there, this like amazing community has formed. And now it's like 1,500 climate professionals have put together this policy. There's been like tens of thousands of conversations that have been had. And the whole concept is we need to make it way more accessible for people to just have these informal conversations with people if they're interested in the space. Like if I wanted to be a teacher tomorrow, I'd probably think of like some teachers that I know and be like, hey, can I just talk to you real quick? Like, just tell me like how it is. What do you do day to day? What did you go to school for? It's really hard to do that with climate work because there's just, it's been around a lot shorter period of time. There's less people that might know someone. So for me, that's been like a huge source of inspiration and like optimism is watching this like very organic community, just like volunteer time come together and then just hearing people be like, that's all I needed. I've just been waiting for like a 15-minute conversation just to get a couple questions answered. So that's been a huge source lately.
That's really cool. I may steal that idea. I mean, I just, you know, I love talking to people. And this is an area where, like I said, we've been trying to really help change people's minds about how to approach nonprofits. And that might be another way to do it. But that's really great. Is there one person in the world of nonprofits that you would want to take to lunch? Who would that be?
I'll say Cheryl Dorsey. I think she's still the executive director of Echoing Green, which is the incubator program that like got me started. And not because I haven't been to lunch with her, but just because I haven't seen her in a while and it'd be nice to catch up.
Perfect. That's great.
And just, you know, tell her how much I appreciated all the work that they did and still do.
Yeah. I feel like I know maybe what your answer would be to this, but the last question, what aspect of your job brings you the most joy?
I think it's having conversations with people that have gone through some kind of like transformation. I'm on the other side of this climate anxiety, or I'm using my job for climate. That's the big one.
And this is a little bit going back, I guess, but do you find that if you can sit down, if you can have a one-on-one conversation with somebody who is resistant, who is that they're more open when they're separated from the group mentality?
No.
Damn.
No, I think there are people that are very good at that. I don't know if I'm one of them, and this is might sound bad, but like I have been working on this for 15 years and like I'm really tired and like I don't know how much energy I have to like sit down and debate with someone if they firmly don't believe in this thing. Like, is it my responsibility to change their mind? I don't know, but I would rather use my energy elsewhere for people that are already like, hey, I'm super interested, but like I could use some help. Like, yeah, I'll go talk to them to make a little bit more progress, I would say.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, man, thank you so much for doing this. It's very insightful and it's an area we haven't really covered here on the podcast yet. And it's a much, like I said, a larger, maybe more existential kind of topic, but it still echoes and mirrors a lot of the things that even small nonprofits we work with are dealing with on different levels. And we're all kind of on the same journey trying to figure it out. Where can people find you, connect with you or your organization, or what's the best way to do that?
I'm only on LinkedIn, so that's probably the best place. And then if you are interested in what I was mentioning about that community, you can check out opendoorclimate.com. And that's where you can find like this directory of just a bunch of climate professionals willing to chat. And I think those are the two main places.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. I'm excited to hear about what you guys are working on. And man, hopefully people can get on board and we can, I don't know, save the world or something.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on and thanks for the platform.
Of course. All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Here we are at the end. You made it. Thank you so much for listening this far. And if you'd like to hear more from Nonprofit Connect brought to you by Rogue Creatives, well then make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on so you don't miss out. Because you don't want to miss out. You want to be on the, you want to be on the in, you know, you want to be on the inner circle. You want to know what's going on. Also, if you're interested in working with us or want to reach out or tell us how amazing we are, visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. You can get all the info there. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Well, we won't see you. We'll hear you. Well, you'll hear us. But whatever. Bye. Nonprofit Connect with Matt Barnes is hosted and executive produced by me, Matt Barnes, with an assist by my chaos coordinator, Tiffany Pope. Production is by our amazing friends over at Fame, the B2B podcast agency, along with Belinda Carter-Thompson and the team here at Rogue Creatives. Production lead is Luke Audie at Fame. Writing is by Sam Hollis at Fame and Matt Barnes and Taylor Bolanos from Rogue Creatives. Nemanja Koljaja of Fame is our audio editor, and Arslan Yakub from Fame is our video editor. Creative direction is by Corey Hill of Rogue. Our artwork is designed by Hope O'Kelly and Joshua Marino at Rogue and Ian Salas of Fame. Theme music is composed and performed by Jared Atherton of Chapters. Luke Audie of Fame does our booking and our guest relations. Huge thanks to our amazing guest for joining us for this episode and to all of you incredible listeners for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, and I don't know why you wouldn't have, don't forget to help us spread some good by giving us a good review. Preferably, you know, 5 stars with lots of words saying how amazing we are on whatever platform you're listening on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is. Also, tell your friends and subscribe so we can come straight into your potholes each and every time we have a new episode. For more information about Nonprofit Connect or to join us at a live event here in Orange County, California, visit our website, npconnect.roguecreatives.com. We'll catch you next time. This has been a Rogue Creatives production.